Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Cassie. Hey, Darkhearts.
Hey there. Sorry, I forget a lot of the time what I'm supposed to say, even though this is, you know, the 97th time we've done this, but like literally.
That's okay. I usually cut out the pause. It's just our patrons who, like, I leave that first little few seconds so they'll hear the pause, but otherwise.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's cool. So, yeah.
Here we are. It's April already? Where the fuck has time gone?
Seriously. My gosh. It's wild. And I was typing up my notes and I was like, 97. Oh my gosh. I can't believe we're on episode 97. So that's fun. But yeah. So, I don't really have anything. I don't know if you want to dive into if you have a case to chat about or anything, or
kind of like it's an update on Riley Strain. So
yes, I'm glad that you're bringing that up.
We forgot to mention last week that his body was found, but I kind of want to go into it because there's still some weirdness
sus
around it.
Stuff. I agree. Yes.
So he was found in the river in the, I wrote it down, the, oh, I can't read my
name. Is it like the Columbus something?
No, it's not Columbus. It was Cumberland.
Oh, Cumberland. Yeah.
Yes. River. I can't read my own handwriting.
Clearly, I don't know what's happening with my life. Okay.
But so like he was 8 miles away from where like they initially, like where he would have started from, which makes sense. River. Okay. So he's found 2 weeks later. But the thing is he was found with no pants, no boots, and no wallet. And his family was like, well, he had a belt on, and like, no matter how fast the river's going, if you have a belt on and those boots, like, I don't think they're going to come off that. Like, boots don't come off easily, whether they were cowboy boots or like the tied up boots, like either way, they're not going to come off that easily.
I read a thing that said that like your body, you know, obviously after you are no longer breathing, like, you know, things can shrink, but I was like, if anything, I thought like, wouldn't you expand because of like the different gases? But like,
gases.
I read a thing where someone said something about technically, and depending on the like temperature of the water, like your body could somewhat shrink. And so those things could have possibly fallen off, but I don't think that would have happened that quickly. And how come there was nothing, like the shirt was still on though too? You know what I mean? Like it's very odd that just bottom half is gone. As far as, I mean, what he was wearing and had
that's
on
still
him.
Weird. So then they also said he died of drowning, but there was no water in his lungs. And now I saw someone post on like one of the Facebook things, like, well, there is such a thing as dry drowning. And there is, however, this is typically with a small child, and with him being in the river, he would have still had lungs, because dry drowning happens when you take in water in your mouth, but like your body spasms and closes everything off, and so you don't get it. But like it happens shortly after you get out of the water. The thing is like with as long as he had been in the water, you would still expect there to be water then in his lungs. Like I don't think dry drowning is going to happen when you're actually in the water. It happens when you're in and you get out right away after taking in that water.
Yeah, and usually it's like a while after the fact where it's like shocking.
It can happen pretty quickly after getting out still, but like
it can, there's like a time frame in there where it can happen, I think later though too.
And, and I think it typically is most common with children. But yeah, I don't know. His parents did request a second autopsy, which I think is a good thing. It just still like
he hit his head a few times, so like he could have died and then fell in, which would explain that.
Yeah.
But why would all those items be missing? Like, did he take them off himself? Like, because was he that intoxicated? And he was, but why? You know what I mean?
Right.
That doesn't make
sense. But
then
also, why haven't we found them? You know, like, because my thought is, because like at first I thought, I was like, well, maybe did he decide he was going to go for a swim? He hit his head, he fell in, you know, or whatever. But at the same time, then we would have seen all of that stuff.
Well,
there.
And I read that there was like a homeless community nearby as well. And I'm like, sometimes those boots and stuff are worth a lot of money. I mean, there can be very expensive boots. And not only that, but even if they weren't, maybe someone saw that as an opportunity too. Like, did he pass out and he was just laying there and someone thought, I'm going to take these items? Or did someone maliciously take them and then, you know, like there's so many unanswered questions.
I do think if anything, maybe because they said they're still like trying to like search around a bit or whatever, I guess. And that's just it. Like maybe he did decide he was going to go for a swim and something happened. And then a homeless person did come across the boots and pants. But at the same time, I wonder too, why didn't he take off his shirt? But then mm-hmm. also, I find it hard to believe that the homeless person would take the full wallet and they would just maybe look for like the cash and stuff. Because anymore, right. it's so easy. Like everything has cameras. It's not like you're going to try right. to take it. And I also feel like if they had come across this, I feel like maybe they would have come forward. Because I feel like 9 times out of 10, like, are there bad people on the streets? Yes. But I feel like more often than not, homeless people are, you know, the homeless people,
they're just trying to survive out there.
Yeah. They tend to be the ones that like police don't care as much about and stuff like that. I feel like more often than not, you know, so like if one of them maybe came across the pants and the boots, but I mean, it's so hard to say. I think, I don't know if we're ever gonna, unless the next autopsy comes out with something substantial that was missed in the first one. I feel like this is going to be one of those cases that unfortunately we're never really gonna know what happened.
Yeah. And it's one of those things too, that's like, I mean, I'm glad that his parents want the second autopsy. Cause it's like, if anything at all, you just confirm what they already know, because it's like, wouldn't you guys want to rule out any other thing? And like the circumstances are very sus. So I don't know. The whole thing is just so sad. And I think we kind of knew that the outcome was going to possibly be that way, but like you still always hope deep down that that's not the case. But it sucks and it's sad, but I mean, I guess we'll see. And a lot of that too, they might have more information they're just not releasing because of it being an open case and all that jazz. So
exactly. But I mean, right now the police there are still determining that it was accidental and there was no foul play, so
who really knows? We'll see. Yeah. We'll see if anything comes to light with that. But yeah, I'm glad you updated us on that. Cause we talked about last week after we finished recording, we're like, oh gosh, we forgot to talk about Riley being found. Cause it was only, I think it was early in the week last week when pretty new information by the time we recorded.
Yeah, it was. So I don't know that we would have had the information we have now, like autopsy and stuff like that. So
yeah. Okay. Well, that's a sad case. If anyone knows anything more than I haven't really looked up anything else to see if anything new has come out since then, but
I looked up right before we got on and like there was stuff from an hour ago, but it pretty much was just saying the same thing, that the parents think that it's weird that he was missing his, you know, because like his belt would have been really close to his body, so that's the other thing. Shrunk, like your bones don't shrink, and they said it would have been like right at his waist. Like I don't know.
Most people wear a belt tight enough that it's literally to keep their pants up. I mean, I get it can be just an accessory type thing as well, but they said
too that like he had such a swimmer's body that he was pretty thin, so he'd wear a belt to keep his pants on.
Literally
snug.
Yeah. So serving the purpose of what a belt does, literally. Exactly. And tall and lanky.
Yep. So the fact that he was wearing a belt, his parents are like, this is what really makes us suspicious that, you know.
Gosh, that's too bad. Well, I guess we'll keep you guys updated too if anything new comes from that. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, this week we're going to go to Indiana, which we haven't been for a while. I was trying to find a state that we haven't been to, and I was like, we hadn't done Indiana for a while. So
no,
here
we
go.
We haven't. Yeah.
No, I know. I was like, I have my ongoing list, you know, we have lists of things to do. And I thought, well, why not just do this one? And I've had this case on my list for a while. So today's the day. It's not as heavy as some of the ones we've done, because I think you can agree, like, it's just been a lot, I feel like, lately. And so it's been kind of nice to take it back a little bit and just like, you know, not dive into,
well, especially with like the gray, dreary weather gruesome. And the fact that we had like that like sneak peek of spring and then we go back. I'm like, I can handle this weather after we've already had nice weather for a long time. But you're like,
in the fall, I'd be fine with this in the fall, but not right now.
Yeah. But now, like, when we've gone from winter and you go from like 70 to like snow again and this back and forth, like, it's just, it's fucking with the mental health.
It really is. Yesterday, I was just like, doing work stuff and laying around, and I was like, why do I feel so depressed? Like, I just feel ick. I don't want to do anything. I'm moody. I hate that. I hate feeling that way. And so I was kind of just like, it's heavy in the sense that it's still a case of a person and an unfortunate circumstances, but I just didn't want it to be like going into gruesome details. There's really, I mean, there's not really, I would say, specific trigger warnings in this. There will be talk of suicide very, very briefly on something that's not necessarily related to the case itself. But other than that, yeah. So June 3rd of 2011, this was a day that really could have gone a lot different. It's one of those things that you think, you know, if this person, you know, would have done one thing different, the whole outcome would have been significantly different, which is pretty much all of these cases, unfortunately, that we cover. But this one specifically, because we are going to be talking about an unsolved case, and because things didn't go differently, that's why we're here talking about this. So Lauren Spearer, she actually would have been 33 now. And who knows what she would have been doing with her life if things had gone a little bit different. So we can kind of just get into that. So here's a little background on Lauren Spearer. I don't know if you'll remember this case at all. I vaguely remember some of this, but it was also, I mean, I want to say 2011 was not that long ago, but it still was. I mean, that was 13 years ago. Like, wild. So, so Lauren was born on January 17th of 1991, to Charlene and Robert Spearer, and she grew up in Scarsdale, New York. So she had graduated from Edgemont High School in 2009, then went to college at Indiana University, where she was studying textile merchandising, which I think that's just fashion type.
I was going to say
fashion design. Like
that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's fashion design. So kind of funny to go from New York to Indiana, but
I know I was thinking that too.
Yeah. I literally was going to look up the distance and stuff. Like, maybe it's not as far as it seems because of where Indiana is pretty far over as far as Heartland area, but still, like, okay. Anyway, she was also super active in the Jewish community at, the university there in Indiana. So she had spent her previous spring break planting trees in Israel on behalf of the Jewish National Fund. So just little fun fact. So Lauren had a boyfriend. His name was Jesse Wolf, and she had met him years prior at a summer camp that she attended in Pennsylvania. She also met a lot of other future IU students who were kind of part of her circle of friends when she started college in 2009. So I also took that as, okay, a lot of the kids in that area apparently are known to attend the University of Indiana. Like, okay. Who would have thought?
Okay.
Yeah. So she met a lot of friends at this camp, and they all kind of went to this college together. So she had been with her boyfriend obviously since sometime in high school. And in 2011, she was 20. So on June 3rd of 2011, all the college kids in that area were out of school now and kind of ready for just bring on the summer. And they were all going to party that night and just celebrate the fact that they were done with classes. So Lauren had plans to go out with a different group of friends that night. Her friend Jay, she actually had met him at that summer camp that she had previously attended, and he also attended IU. He lived there, and he had a friend in town. And so he was planning on having people over, and they were going to pregame before they went out that night. So also kind of just putting into perspective their age, the pregaming was going to start at about 12:30 a.m. So that tells you that they are young college kids.
Even when I was 20, though, I was like, if I'm not out of my house by 7 p.m., I'm not leaving. It's too
I put it 7 p.m. in my notes here that 7 p.m. is like now. I'm like, if it starts after 7, I'm not going. I do have to say we would go out pretty late in college. Sorry, my dog is chewing a bone here. I hope you can't hear her. I just helped her to move, so she left. Okay. But I mean, that's still pretty late. I mean, I'm saying, like, I remember still getting ready to go out at like 10:30, but 12:30 is like real late.
I would have needed to have already been at someone else's house first doing that, because if I was still at my house, no way.
Right. And like, we all know pre-gaming. Oh, there's my dog. If nobody can see except Cassie, but there's my cute little dog. And anyway, so I think like in pre-gaming, we know that the final game plan of that is you still are going elsewhere. So pre-gaming at 12:30, it's not like that's your final destination.
Well, and in 2011, bars still closed at like 1, right?
Well, it depends on the state because different states have different. It was 1. And then when it changed, I remember thinking like, man, that would have been great back in the day. But now I'm like, ew, who stays out that late anyway? Like, not me. I've been asleep for a good few hours at that point. Yeah. So, yeah. So just kind of just to put you in that mindset of being 20 years old. So,
yes.
Around 12:30 a.m., she leaves her apartment with her friend Dave, and they are heading over to Jay's place. So Jay's her friend, the one from summer camp. Yeah. So he didn't live very far away at all. Plus, this is a college town, so everything is somewhat relatively close, I guess. So his townhome that he lived in was really just a few streets away. So her boyfriend, Jesse, he did not want to go out that night. So he was not with her that night. He planned on staying in and just wanted to watch basketball and go to bed. So he knew that she was going to go out and he knew that they would maybe, you know, they would have some contact throughout the night, but he wasn't concerned, which I was like, oh, this is refreshing. I feel like a lot of these times, like a boyfriend, especially at that age, is pissed off you're going out. And not only that, but you're with another guy. Like,
yeah. Well, so two I was other like, guys, because you're with Dave going to Jay's.
Right. Yeah. So I was like, this is nice. I like Jesse right now. So
yeah, this is a nice, yeah.
Yeah, it's refreshing. So he knew that he'd hear from her at some point, like I said, but he wasn't too concerned. So he figured at least by the next day, if anything. So the next day, he reaches out to her, calls her, texts her. All of his messages are going unanswered well into the afternoon of that day. So at one point, I don't know if it's a call or a text or whatever, but he finally gets a response from her phone, but it's not her. So
yeah,
it was someone who worked at a bar called Kilroy's, which was a very popular bar in the town that college students would go to. So the guy that had the phone, he said he worked at the bar there and that he had found this phone at the bar and he didn't know who it belonged to, but it kept going off. He could hear it. So I'm glad he at least answered it. So now Jesse's obviously concerned. So he reaches out to Lauren's roommate. So she meets up with him. I think she was going to work or whatever. So she just gives him a key to their apartment. He's, you know, go check on her. So he goes to their apartment and finds out quickly that she is not there. Doesn't look like she had slept in her bed. I mean, it's obviously very concerning now. So nobody seems to know where she is. And the fact that she doesn't have her phone is also alarming because you, when you're 20, have your phone. So,
right.
This is around now like 4:30 PM. So he goes and reports her missing to the police. I'm glad he didn't waste any time on that.
Yeah.
The police were, you know, now notified and the friends of Lauren realized they need to let her family know too, what's going on. So one of the friends had reached out to Lauren's sister and let her know, which, you know, in turn, she let her parents know and they freak out. So they reach out to Jesse to see what's going on, but he doesn't really have any more information other than what he's already given to the police because he hadn't been out with her the night before. So he's really kind of blind to the whole thing too. So her parents start calling hospitals around and checking to see if she had possibly been in an accident. She's nowhere to be found. No hospital has any record of her or any Jane Doe. So they quickly book flights from New York to Indiana to help look for Lauren. So the first few days of Lauren missing, the police don't really have much information to tell her family. They're still trying to kind of piece together a timeline of who had seen her last, where she had been. But this is all super hard because everybody that she had been with was very intoxicated because they all were partying. So either they really don't remember or they don't remember what they, you know, they don't want to share what they remember, whatever. They're all probably scared at this point too. So who knows? So the police start tracing her steps from where the night started. So Lauren had left her apartment, like we know, around 12:30 to go to Jay's house. So the interesting thing about this case is there has really never been any information, I suppose, other than this little tiny bit that police released. So when we were just talking about that previous case with Riley Strain, the boy, you know, I find it interesting too when police I mean, it makes you think maybe they do have more because it is an open case and they are holding it close to them. But in this situation, several years have passed and there still is not more that has come out. So the only thing that they really release is the surveillance that they have of Lauren leaving her apartment that night. So we don't actually even know what time that was. I'm going to assume it was probably at that 12:30 timestamp. They don't show it. They don't say. But it's clear to, I mean, that she hasn't been in drinking probably at this point yet. She seems coherent. She's happy. She's carrying all of her items with her. She just looks like she's going out. So this was really the only picture that I even do kind of remember from this case. They took like a still from that video. So it's, you can tell she's in motion in the video or from the picture. She's wearing black leggings and she had like a flowy kind of white top. And she's like running her fingers kind of through her hair. Just, I mean, any normal college girl getting ready to go out. And to this day, like I said, this is really the only image that's ever been released from this case, which is interesting. And I think they really did release this picture because it was the last thing they she was known to have been wearing. So people kind of knew what they were looking for. But they really have kept anything else they do have really close to them. So people knew that they were looking for black leggings and a white shirt, most likely, while they were looking. So, according to Lauren's dad, Jesse had been there helping them search the first couple days, but then his parents had come down from New York and took him back with them, which in turn was very hurtful and confusing to Lauren's parents because, like, okay, if they had been dating this long, you know, you would think they probably are close to Lauren. They know that their son is. So like, Lauren's dad just said how that like was a very weird thing to them and hurtful. He thought that they would want to help too. And they kind of thought that that was just weird. So, I mean, we can't really speculate too much on what was going on and what their reasoning was. It could have also been like, we don't want this to come back to you. And in reality, he really was home. So like, we can clear him on that. So, which makes it even weirder. Like,
people deal with that kind of stuff though in such different ways. It's kind of that's hard true. To say. And like, I mean, we don't know what kind of parents, like totally people his parents are. Like, maybe they're not that nice of people.
I know. Maybe they really never did like her and that just never came out. Because once again, there's not a lot of information about this case that has been released. We don't really know. And maybe they were thinking like, yeah, let's protect our kid. The police are taking care of this, which is true too. A lot of times you're like, a lot of search parties can also make things messier depending on the situation. So, so other than that, like police are like, still just trying to piece together everything that's going on, which kind of creates a dark cloud over everyone that had been out with her that night because nobody seems to remember anything, but they all feel like they're kind of under the microscope. So,
well, I mean, yeah, like, and I'm sure some of them, like, because obviously if she was only 20, there's underage drinking happening, right?
Yeah. Oh, so for sure. Yeah. And so they're all scared probably too that like, they don't want to get in trouble. Nobody wants an MIP. Like, well, yes, there are much worse things, but which we'll talk about that a little bit too. But the police, so they can find out here, they can piece at least this much together that once Lauren left, her and her friend Dave, they go to Jay's townhome. So they know for sure that at least there were two other people there. I'm sure there were other people, but these are the only two names that really are brought up in any sort of document or news story about this. Corey and Mike were the two that were there. So they lived in the same townhome, like complex as Jay. They were not roommates with Jay, but it said that they lived like 30 feet apart. So I'm guessing it was like maybe the attached townhome.
Or like across the street or like, it's like it's a set of townhomes. Cause like there are those apartments that they'll be like, they're apartments, but yet they're all townhomes. And so you'll have like sometimes 3 to 4 all attached.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it literally said 30 feet from front door to front door. So that's, I mean, they're neighbors, very close neighbors. So, like I had mentioned to you before, like Lauren knew Jay well. So it's not like she was just going to a stranger's house or anything like that. But she really didn't know this Corey and Mike very well. They were pretty new acquaintances to her. Lauren's parents said that she had actually met Corey just within the previous week of going missing. She had met him while they were attending the Indy 500. So, okay. And they're all like at that age too. And her being like social and stuff, like,
yeah,
when you meet someone new, you're like all about, let's all be friends. I feel like at that age, I don't know, most people, but
yeah.
So at Jay's house, everybody that was there was drinking. And it was reported that Lauren had appeared to already be super intoxicated. So she's tiny. She was under 5 feet and under 100 pounds. So doesn't probably take a whole lot for her to get to that point.
Drunk. Yeah.
Very petite. So, you know, like we talked about too, knowing that they were pre-gaming there, they still had plans to go out. So around 1:30 that morning, they leave Jay's to go to the bar, this Kilroy's. And I don't know who all left. There's a lot of conflicting reports on that, but the reports that I read, the court report specifically made it sound like it was just Corey and Lauren that left together, which is kind of weird. I mean, she doesn't know him that well, but if they're super drunk, hey, let's keep the party going. So they go to the Kilroy's, which is walking distance. So I read a couple places too. This doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the case, but I read that this was an 18 plus bar and you just had to be of drinking age to order a drink. But then I also read somewhere that you had to be 21 to get in. So I'm not sure if she had a fake ID, if she didn't need it because of the bar itself. Either way, it doesn't really affect the big picture, but just kind of interesting. So either way, they do go into this bar and they continue drinking. So Corey was buying her lots of drinks and they were just having a good time. So Lauren had gone out back of this bar and there was a big patio area and a sandy area. So she goes to this little sandy area, kicks off her shoes. He comes out, they hang out there for a while and have a few more drinks. So, I mean, like to me, my 38-year-old self, you know, I think, what the hell are you doing? Why are you with this random guy? You don't have your safety guard up. Like, you know, and but then also, I think a lot of people that age just feel very invincible and you think nothing bad is ever going to happen to you.
Well, and especially if he was kind of friends with a good friend of hers, a lot of times you're like, oh, it's fine. Like, you know.
Well, and that was another thing too. I was like, this whole case just makes me think of like safety. I think just because you know someone who knows someone that you know doesn't mean you should trust them with your safety. You know, but when you're 20 years old, I think it's easy to do that. And you really don't, you think everyone has innocent, you know, just intentions maybe. And not that he didn't, but like in this case, I just think that's very scary. And I feel like even when I was that age, I was always like self-aware of like the, you know, the crime, true crime nerds in us, like you still are aware of that. So like, that's just scary anyway, knowing that she's that intoxicated just by herself with this guy. So done with my soapbox, but I just wanted to, this whole case just makes me really want to focus on like safety.
Well, that's like some of the younger girls I work with, like are on dating apps and things like that. And I just want to be like, be safe. So make sure you're always meeting in a public place. You have your own link and like, make sure someone always knows where you're at.
Right. Yeah. You know, and in 2011, like, cell phones were a thing and stuff, but it's like, there's not even as many, I mean, things, unfortunately, that happen have made things what they are now. I mean, now there are more safety things on your phones and stuff like that because of cases like this, maybe. But either way, I guess they're having a good time. So they're still partying. They're there for a while. About a half hour after they were out back, they finally decide to leave Kilroy. So it's about 2:30 in the morning now. Lauren was so intoxicated that she left her phone there and she also left her shoes there. So here she is barefoot, stumbling back down the street to her apartment with this Corey character. So they take the elevator to the fifth floor, which is where she lived. Thank God for elevators. I think how shitty would that be to have to hike up that many stairs on the fifth floor? Yeah. Anyway, this is kind of where things maybe get a little bit dicey because they get off the elevator and as they're walking to her door, which apparently is like right next to the elevator, they kind of encounter this group of guys and there's some sort of altercation there and Corey gets punched in the face by one of the guys. So reports say different things. One said that the guy, one of the guys in the group was like familiar to Lauren. So maybe this neighborly, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the police never really said either way either, which I find bizarre, but I do feel like there has to be surveillance. If they have surveillance of her leaving that apartment, there would have to be surveillance of her arriving, right? I mean,
right.
Based on if they're going to have surveillance, they probably have it in the same areas. I don't know what hallway it was her leaving they caught her on. But either way, guess what? We never know. It has never been released. So that's shitty. But that was just a very weird thing. So they haven't even shown that footage to Lauren's family still. So they don't even know. Like, wouldn't you show someone and say, can you identify these people? Do you know who these guys are? Yeah. I don't know. So that's the thing that's weird about that is they're right by her apartment. So, okay, after this happens, wouldn't you maybe just go into her apartment? No, they decide that they're going to leave now and go back to Corey's instead. So yeah, this is why I'm like, it's very dicey and weird. And once again, maybe if they would have just gone into her apartment, the whole night would have been different. But they leave the complex at this point and they take the elevator back down and she leaves with Corey at 2:42 a.m. So more footage, police say, shows that this is them, you know, they are heading back. So they do have footage of that. So yeah, you think there'd be a little bit more information on that. There's a lot left out there that we kind of just can piece together. But there's also some weird things. Like, different news reports say different things, and we don't really know which one is correct. So in 2016, ABC said that Lauren is captured on footage falling twice while she's walking to Corey's. And they'd say that these are not like little falls. Like, these are major falls because she's so intoxicated. She falls hard on her face and can hardly even walk and function. They also said that because she couldn't really walk after she had fallen, Corey, like, basically fireman throws her over his shoulder and continues walking doing that. So that's what they said in 2016. But in 2012, the Indianapolis Monthly said something completely different. They said that they saw footage that says that Lauren is on video with someone walking, but at 2:51, she is captured walking out of an alley into an empty parking lot near Corey's townhome. Okay, so these are completely conflicting and not... they don't have anything to do with the other. So which one's real and like which one isn't? We don't know. Like, did something change from 2012 to 2016 that they discovered?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I'm just thinking, like, also she was right by her apartment. Why didn't she get some shoes?
No shit. And like, because she was probably like, I think about being that drunk, like that feels like it's almost borderline like alcohol poisoning, you know, like to not even be able to like function and falling and stuff.
And at that point it's like, you think she's probably blackout drunk.
Oh, yeah. Totally. You know?
And so,
because she's that tiny and they talk about, like, I don't know how many drinks we're talking at this point that she has put into her body. And I don't know if it's beer. What? Is it hard alcohol? Like, I don't know.
Well, and who's to say that something wasn't slipped to her?
Yeah. And we'll talk about that a little bit maybe too as far as theories go. But like this case too, it kind of reminded me of the Riley Strain case just in the fact of like they talk about the footage of him falling into those poles.
Yeah.
And so like it's a lot of weird coincidences, I guess, kind of between the two. I know it's not the same at all, but just in the fact that we talk about being that intoxicated and safety and all the things. So who knows, really, if either of those stories are real or not as far as the footage found, because nobody's actually seen it.
Yeah, because if the 2016 one, though, like if they were still walking to his place and if the other footage was from them being there, maybe she went off to the alley to throw up.
Right.
And then was coming back.
I know. I don't know. And that's like the thing, too, that like it sucks that the police are not releasing more. And like, I mean, I get it. But like now that this much time has gone by, if you still have nothing, what does it hurt to release a little bit more and see if maybe you can get something more? So none of this was confirmed by the police. And it sounds like no one has actually seen this footage because, you know, like we said, they could both be rumors. There could be a little bit of truth to both of these. Like you said, maybe she did go throw up and I don't know. But then there was also an apparent, you know, witness to this. So This witness said that around 3:38 a.m. that morning, they saw somebody who matched Lauren's description being tossed over someone's shoulder. But the timeline doesn't quite fit, and there isn't any footage that we're aware of with this. But this could maybe be where this whole idea kind of got started, that he carried her. So we don't know for sure. But once again, when people talk to, that's when things, and now with this much time going by, like, stories are going to just keep growing and growing.
Right.
But, you know, if we do believe this eyewitness, I mean, it could have been Corey. And if that's the case too, like, if he's able to carry her, is he less drunk? Like, is he more coherent? Who knows? But anyway, so they get back to Corey's place. So we don't know how they got there, but they get there eventually. When they get there, Corey throws up on the concrete steps right outside of his place. And, you know, this could be from the alcohol, which is my guess, or they talked about, or from being hit in the face, which could be, but I'm like, if one punch, like, yeah, I that's kind of, I was like,
hit him hard enough.
Yeah. We don't know. Like, that's the thing. Yeah, it could have been, I don't know. But, Corey's roommate, Mike, he sees how drunk they are and they're in just bad shape. So he gets Corey, like, into bed, and he's trying to get Lauren to just, like, chill on the couch, lay down. But Lauren is, like, in party mode, wants to keep partying. And, you know, at that point, when someone is that drunk and headstrong, like, they just want to keep partying. And he's like, no, I really don't want to keep partying. And he also did not want to have to babysit a drunk girl. Understandable. And it's, like, super late, or early, I guess, in this case, early in the morning, late at whatever. Yeah. So he knows that she knows Jay, who's, you know, 30 feet away. So he basically somehow gets her to over there because he thinks, okay, Jay can take care of her. This is his friend.
Right.
He can deal with it. So Jay was probably like, what the hell? What the hell is going on? And who knows how intoxicated he was. So I'm sure she was like a sight to see when she gets there because she has no phone, no shoes, clearly just beyond intoxicated. They even talked about him saying that she had bruises like on her face from when she was falling, which, okay, I mean, I don't know that that would be a bruise as much as like a cut or something, because you don't necessarily bruise that fast, but maybe you, if you're drinking that much too, I guess, and it's possible. So, so she goes in there, and just like she was at Corey and Mike's, I mean, she wants to keep partying and he just wants to go to bed. So she borrows his phone, knowing that she doesn't have his, and she made a couple calls that go unanswered. We don't know who she called. They never really say, but I was thinking like Jesse probably, but I don't know that, her boyfriend. So doesn't really matter, but
or
calls
go
unanswered.
That she thinks, or friends still, that she thinks might still be out partying.
Yeah. So whatever happens after that, we will really probably never know the conversation that was had between her and Jay. But whatever happens, whether it's an argument or not, she decides that she's just going to leave. So she, you know, and if he's that drunk too, he's probably like, whatever, just go. So she ends up leaving the house at about 4:30 a.m. that morning. And she walks out of his house with no shoes, still no phone. He watches her leave and he sees her turn up the street that leads to her apartment because, you know, it's all close, like we've said. So that's the last we ever hear, because Lauren never makes it back to her apartment after that. So 13 years later, and she still is missing. So, you know, naturally her parents had like a million questions for the guys that she hung out with that night.
Right.
And the thing that really sucked too about this was that all of these guys came from like very well-off families who had lots of money and understood the importance of having a lawyer early on in any kind of investigation. So this doesn't go over well with Lauren's family. They just want to find their daughter. And they weren't like accusing these guys of anything. They were kind of just like, hey, we want to know what happened. Did she say anything? Was she meeting anybody? Like, how drunk was she? And, you know, like, that's all it is. But naturally, they all like lawyer up. I mean, which is also smart.
Yeah,
so like, I get it on both sides.
Though, especially too, because it's so easy. I mean, we've seen so many cases where police decide to just pin
yeah
these things on someone who's convenient.
Yeah.
And so it's really a double-edged sword. I can understand why, especially because they're like, this young, petite, I'm assuming white girl went missing. Yeah,
blonde, yep. Like,
and we're several guys, like, who were with, like, nah. Like, I can understand why they lawyered up.
Yeah, totally. So, like, I get it from both points. As a parent, I would be like, just tell me anything you know. But, yes. So I'm like, okay, I get it. But Jay's lawyer said that Jay had given several statements to the police. They searched, you know, his home, everything. He did polygraphs. And that he even had, like, a face-to-face conversation with Lauren's parents. And same with Jesse. They said that Jesse also did all the same things. So it's interesting, though, because it sounds like she had spent most of the time that night with Corey. And so if anything he would have to say would probably be helpful, but he wasn't as forthcoming as the other guys as far as talking to police. He didn't want to cooperate at all, which also was kind of strange because, like,
that seems shady.
Yeah. Like, her parents even were like, dude, if you literally just puked and passed out, why can't we just talk about that and sort this out? Like, what happened after that? So it just made him look worse. But Corey's lawyer made a public statement and said that Corey didn't have much memory of that night because of the punch to his face and the head injury. But then years later, Corey actually came out and said that he never said that and that his lawyer just spoke on his behalf and said that.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes you think, like, is there something he did remember that he didn't want to talk about or what? Like, you know, but that's what lawyers are going to do. I mean, that's their job.
Right. But then I also am like, well, did you go to the hospital? Because, like, is there proof of a head injury?
Yeah, like, I know. And that's the thing that sucks is that, like, there's such little information about this case that it makes you wonder what is not all out there. And there could be, like, proof of that. And if that's the case, okay, cool. We get it now. Like, we'll leave you alone. Right,
but it makes me lean more towards, like, maybe we were smoking weed or doing some other drugs that we weren't. Yeah. You know, like,
what are you 2011, trying to hide?
Especially if you come from a family with money and stuff like that, like, you're trying to not ruin your future. Like, it's not, I feel like it's not that they don't care about her, but I also feel like in that instance too, you're thinking about, well, if I say this, then it's going to ruin my whole chance of all that. You know what I mean? Like, you're so young and it's so difficult because you don't know. Like, it's like, police aren't your friends. You can't really trust the police in situations like this. They are going to take whatever they can and use it against you. They'll say whatever they need to say. They can lie to you. Like,
yes, to get you to say things. And it's really shitty when you think about that. Like, I understand, like, in some cases it's good because they've caught people, like, actual bad people.
Yeah, for sure.
But in other cases it's like, okay, it's a crime for us to lie to the police, but it's okay for them to lie to us. Like, it just, it's shitty. And like, it's an easy cop out too. Like, I was drunk. I don't remember anything. Okay. You know, like, that's easy for them all to use that defense. So, you know, but, like, police are obviously looking at other possibilities too. So, she could have run into someone else after leaving Jay's place. The only other image that was ever actually released, I guess, in this case was a picture of a white truck that apparently had been, like, circling the area where Lauren had last been seen. After they had released this photo, they did get lots of different tips in. But the one that was, I mean, held the most weight was, a woman said that her ex had just been released from prison shortly before Lauren had gone missing. And he allegedly had made comments to her about Lauren and said that she said that he had told her that he was involved and that if she made trouble for him, whatever happened to Lauren would happen to her. So, like, okay, he wasn't a bad lead. He did drive a white truck.
Okay.
However, after a while, they completely rule him out, and then they all together rule out the white truck being involved at all, and they said they believed that this had nothing to do with Lauren's disappearance, which they must have more to go off of to come to that conclusion. But tell us then, because what the hell? Any white truck I see, like, after that, I would be like, okay, there he is, you know?
I'm curious if they have actual footage of her, like any like from the street or whatever, of her walking back towards her apartment and stuff. Or if it's all just based on what Jay said.
Because that's, yeah, it sounds like he was pretty drunk too. So like, who knows? But then, yeah, so that lead goes nowhere. So then about 2 months after she's gone missing, they decide they're going to search the landfill where, you know, all the trash is dumped in the city. So Lauren's dad said that this was the hardest part of this entire thing for him, because he said he had to just stand there and watch them look for his daughter in trash. And I'm not sure what led them to that area, or if that was just like the next step of, you know, what you're looking for. But they spent 9 12-hour days, and they searched through 41 tons of trash, but nothing turned up. Nothing
at
all.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So by 2012, her parents publicly said that they did not think they would find her alive. And they said that was really, really hard for them. They were super frustrated because so much time had passed, but nothing new was even being talked about. They said they felt like everything that was still talked about was stuff from the first day or first 30 days even, and that nothing new was coming about. They were mad because, you know, police weren't sharing anything or any leads, any findings, anything at all with the family. So the family ends up hiring a private investigator. The private investigator basically came back to the same conclusion that the people that they had been talking to that had been with Lauren that night just weren't sharing everything that they knew.
Yeah.
They said, you know, they don't think that she was necessarily like murdered, but they think they have to know something more.
Right.
So, one of the theories too, that really there's no substance to this, but, you know, they think maybe there was some sort of accident that night. So did she hit, maybe she hit her head, you know, which we knew she had fallen a couple times. They thought maybe she OD'd, because then there starts to become talk of other drugs. So when police are searching through her apartment during all of this, they do find a small amount of cocaine in her apartment. And so because of that, and without having a lot of other information, people take that and run with that. So whether she used drugs or not, it's shitty because, like, it doesn't mean she's any less worthy of being found. You know, like, I hate that. And people just act like, oh, she's a shitty person. She was doing cocaine. It's like, you don't know that. And either way, why does that mean that she doesn't deserve to be found?
Well, come on. Like, that's the time to experiment with things.
And who knows if it was even hers? I mean, it could have been a roommate's. It could have been anybody else's. And it was a small amount. So, like, who really knows?
She might have taken it, like, it might have been, like, you know, instead of taking Adderall. Some people in school take Adderall to help them stay awake and study. Also, listen, cocaine is the same kind of general effects as that. So,
who's to say? It's just shitty of people to even go that route. And, I mean, she's a college kid. Like, that does not define her.
No.
She's 20 years old. Like, she's come
20.
On. So, like, you know, people are like,
even if she was shooting up, that doesn't mean she's less deserving. I mean, she has a problem.
Totally. Like, that's, people look at it very wrong and judgy, and, people are attacking her character, whether she used or not. So, like I said, the only reason I'm actually mentioning this part of it is because people made theories that she had mixed drugs with the alcohol and that maybe an accident happened because of that. Otherwise, who cares? Like, that's really not necessarily a part of this investigation or not. It could be, but that's the thing. So
if that was the case, then someone, probably one of those guys or all those guys, hid her body.
Yeah, exactly.
Because so, if she was just walking home and like passed out from it.
You don't OD and hide your own body.
No.
Like, let's be honest. So
she'd have been found. Someone hid her.
Yeah, totally. So she was also known to have, it was called long QT syndrome, which is a heart condition that makes it that much more dangerous to use, you know, drugs. So mixing any drugs with this condition could cause death. So a lot of people wondered if maybe she had tried a different drug or was drugged, or, you know, just having that mixed with alcohol on top of this heart condition could kill her. So who was she with and what happened? And if something did happen, why wouldn't people call for help? So I think that that's kind of why the police and the private investigator keep coming back to these guys that she was with that night, because you just don't know. So the family really felt like it was them against the police. They didn't think that Lauren was abusing drugs. Like, they know their daughter well enough. Yeah, maybe she was trying them here and there, but it's not like she was a drug addict. And they felt like everybody was just bashing Lauren and wanted to act like she had done something to deserve this. Because they felt like after this cocaine was kind of discovered and talked about with other people, they felt like the police didn't want to help them as much. And that's really sad. So, but that's unfortunate how that goes. So then another twist in things. In 2013, Jesse's parents were tired of the Spear family talking about him. So they come out and make a statement that Lauren's parents are liars. And they said that Lauren wasn't missing because of what someone did to her, but because of her drug abuse. And I hate, like, that just goes ick to even say that. Like,
ew.
Yeah, that's just...
That's not okay.
It's aggressive and it's rude. And, like, why do you have to go attack her family over something like that?
If
you know?
Anything, send a cease and desist letter or something. Right. You know?
Like, and once again, you don't just overdose and hide your own body. So even if she had overdosed from her, quote, drug abuse, quote, you know, somebody still would have had to hide her body. So you don't just do that yourself. So for them to, like, put the entire blame on Lauren is just cruel and it's ugly and
it's
hurtful.
Just really gross.
Yeah, it's disgusting. So Jesse's parents claimed, you know, all these things like, oh, well, Lauren had actually been kicked out of the summer camp for drugs and she had a prior arrest, which none of that really was ever talked about whether it happened or not. So I don't know if that's true or not. Either way, it doesn't mean she deserved to go missing. I think that that's safe.
I feel like
say.
If she did, that stuff would have come out in the news because you could easily find that. And at the camp would have divulged.
Spoke that, on know, that. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. So it was like really just an attack on her character. And she's just a young girl. Like, really, I think people forget that, you know, she didn't just go missing. Yeah. From just being out and partying, like something happened.
100%. Which leads me to believe that one, his parents never did care for her.
Yeah. From the very beginning. Two, yeah.
And like, so that's why they left. And it also feels like, I don't know if he came from money too, but like, we're going to make you come home with us because we don't want this to ruin your future.
Yeah.
She was never good for you anyways, type of situation. Like,
That's exactly
how
it feels.
Family situation is, but it almost feels like they thought she was from like the quote unquote wrong side of the tracks and she wasn't good enough for their baby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just
feels like,
real gross.
Were they mad that she was out with other guys, even though Jesse didn't seem to care? Like, did they think she was hoeing it up and they didn't like it? I mean, that's stupid.
So many things, but either way, I think Jesse seems like he'd be in the clear here, but his parents are gross. But I feel like
I know
Jay and Corey and them
know something more. I agree.
Something more.
So, you know, over this span of years, there's lots of different tips that come in and some are more publicized than others. In 2016, a raid was actually done at a home that was about 30 minutes away from where Lauren had last been seen. They said it was in connection with her case. They had brought in cadaver dogs. They sifted through tons of dirt and they even towed a white truck away. And then we never heard anything else about it. So another time, a guy who had been in prison came forward and said that his cellmate said that Lauren had OD'd and that he had dumped her body in the Ohio River. Nothing ever came from that either. They did search the river and they never found anything. So it really seemed like the police were like doing nothing. And that's kind of how, I mean, Lauren's family felt after this much time. I'm sure that's discouraging.
Yeah.
So then I'm not sure what year this happened, but the, you know, Lauren's family, they ended up, well, starting the process of filing civil suits against some of these men that were involved, like Jay, Corey, any of them, because they said, you know, they had been out with her and they had refused to give any information about what happened. But the judge ended up throwing out these cases and said it would set bad legal precedents. She said, yes, we know that they were with her, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily their responsibility that she stayed alive. So the judge said that if she actually had gone forward with this, it would hinder good Samaritans from coming forward to help someone in need. So like, Which that's is true, fair. Because yeah. she said, mm-hmm. if you see someone fall and they're super drunk and you go help them, you know, cross the street or whatever, where does your liability and responsibility end in helping them then?
Yeah.
You know, like, are you responsible then if they die later because you didn't walk them all the way to their home and put them in their bed? You know, like,
right. yeah.
so I understand, but I think her parents, it was a desperate plea for anything. Yeah. So we never really got more information because they hoped that in that case they would be able to subpoena their phone records and stuff, which I don't know why they wouldn't have done that already. Maybe they did and we just don't know. Hard to yeah. say. So, you know, and then like the odds are unlikely that she had gotten picked up by a stranger in that tiny, short little walk, but it's still a theory. So
yeah.
this is a very interesting theory too. I'm not sure if this name will ring a bell to you or not. I did have to look up a little bit about it because I knew who he was, but when people talk about this theory of being picked up by a stranger, the name Israel Keyes gets brought up.
Oh, so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, like, I had to look up more details on him. I knew the general idea. So, Israel Keyes, which let me pull. I had it pulled up on a separate thing to just kind of give you the gist of this. So, anybody who doesn't know, he was an American serial killer, bank robber, arsonist, kidnapper, sex offender. So he murdered at least 3 people and is suspected of murdering at least between 11 to 20 people from the year 2001 through 2012. He was kind of all over the country. So yeah. you'll see why he gets tied into this because so back in the day, there, when they were investigating him, there was a tracker of all of his travel. Ironically, in 2011, he had been in Indiana because they have proof of him paying tolls in Indiana. But not only was he in Indiana that year, on the day that Lauren went missing, he was in Indiana. So it's a stretch, but because of this, it could mean anything. They said, like, could he have possibly just drove through a college town on his way? Because he was known to not have a type of like method of killing. Victim. And he yeah. would just take, yeah, it was crimes of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so in this case, like, what are the chances? Very likely could have been. And I thought that right. was crazy interesting because I thought, what, you know, he actually did die by suicide after he had been arrested. He killed himself in his cell, but he had left an interesting note behind and he had drawn, I think it said like 11 heads or something. So that's where they think that maybe he had done more and right. that would have been right on the timeline. So that one was kind of crazy. It's sketchy a little bit and we know it's a stretch, but
right.
the times not- could have made it possible and plausible.
Yeah. yeah.
You never like know.
You can't completely rule it out.
Yeah. Or, you know, is there another serial killer out there? The name Daniel Messel also got brought up. So Daniel Messel had pled guilty to another murder of an IU student in 2018 named Hannah Wilson. Similar to Lauren, she had actually gone missing after a night out with friends under very sketchy circumstances as well. They did find her body, however, the next day. And the evidence found there led them right to Daniel Messel. So immediately, they connected this to Lauren's case because of a lot of the similarities. The prosecutor of Hannah Wilson's case said that absolutely he was convinced that Messel had something to do with Lauren's disappearance based on the evidence they had. However, the people that were actually working on Lauren's case said that there is no connection unless they're not saying something that they know.
Right. And my thing is, though, is like, how do you get away with this one murder and you hide this body so well? And then the second one, you get so sloppy. And now, mind you, there are killers who can get away for a long time and then they do get sloppy, but I feel like that's not enough.
Right.
Like that seems right. like too sloppy. Like it's like he yes. just left her body and she was found. Like not like yes. he didn't hide it well enough or we left evidence behind. Like
yeah, totally. That's kind of what I was like. I mean, you know, and like you have to look at all of the like things, but at the same time, yeah. And I mean, that big of a time span between 2011 and 2018, like, do you think he really didn't kill for that big long time and then suddenly just did it and was messing yeah. with it? Like, I don't know.
That seems more but, like an escalation type thing.
I agree.
Like,
I agree.
Yeah.
And then There's another theory too. This one is very interesting too. And I know there's a lot of different things on this, but because this case still isn't solved, I think it's important to talk about the different things. This one was interesting because this, there was a report that a homeless man, had heard a woman scream around the time that Lauren would have been walking home. It was said that this homeless man who heard the scream, he was well known in the Bloomington area. I think he had just, you know, he was a well-known guy for whatever. And, his name was Franklin Crawford. So I'm not sure if this was ever really like looked into, but the little bit that I saw, said that he actually died a couple days after Lauren had gone missing, which is very interesting because, like, okay, so yes, he's a transient, you know, but he's well known to the people in the community. And interestingly, when I tried to find an obituary on him, there was nothing, but I did read that there was an apartment complex called Crawford Apartments that was named after him, like subsidized housing. And the quote that I saw, the person who like owned this building said that Frank would have been eligible for it. And they said Frank suffered from many ailments and would have been an ideal tenant for this apartment. It was only discovered that Frank had passed away when a neighbor found his body in a dumpster. He had literally been thrown away. So I don't know if this was named after him because of some other reasons. I don't know. Yeah. There's a lot of unknowns in that statement. But the fact that they had found his body, like he wasn't just passed away on the street. I don't know how old he was, but there's nothing about the actual cause of death. But it's very interesting that the guy who happens to hear a scream dies 2 days after that happens.
Yeah.
It could be a coincidence. But
I mean, it could be, but it seems to me like even if it's a coincidence, the police clearly didn't care enough to look into his
right. And you don't throw yourself into a trash can either, unless he was in there like sleeping for warmth or whatever. I don't know, but I find that very ironic.
But I feel like police would have just been like, "Well, he was homeless. What do you expect?"
Yes.
And wouldn't have even run an autopsy necessarily. Yeah.
No, because I couldn't even find an obituary. So
yeah,
you know, the whole thing is weird, and the police are just so tight-lipped that it makes it even more sus. And they've never really released any other footage. Other police departments that talk about this case say that they release information because it generally is something that the public can help them with. And a lot of times when they keep footage to themselves and then people think, oh my gosh, what do they know? What do they have? But then when they release it, there's never like anything anyway. So it's like, why would you not just release it if you, you know, there's lots of rumors that float around, but one that does keep going around. And I do want to reiterate that this is just a rumor. But you know, people think that there was some kind of accident that night and whoever she was with, whoever, whatever happened, that she had died. So whoever she was with, whether she knew them or not, there's talk that they had put her body in a new construction zone where apartments were being built at the time that was called Station 11. And it turns out that this was happening at this time. So who knows what part was being built when and what was done and whatnot. But construction was happening. So whether it's the fact that just there was construction that started this rumor or if there's any truth to that, it's always a little interesting when that keeps popping up because sometimes like there is more to the whispers than you know?
Right.
So especially there's no talk on if they've looked into that or not, but
especially if someone has a guilty conscience and kind of confesses to someone a little bit, like,
and there's, you know, there are cases where you find out later that there is truth to some of those rumors that get started. So I don't know, but yeah, it just keeps coming back to her parents really just wanting more information from those that were with her that night. And they do feel that those people that were with her should have taken better care of her, which overall friends in general, but it's also you would hope your friends would take better care of you, but also it's not just their responsibility too. So like, I get it all, but
no. And there's also only so much a friend can do if you're being strong-willed about partying more and they're drunk too. You know what I mean? Like there's only, you know, that's a tough situation. I don't know. This does feel to me like either someone spiked a drink and then freaked out, or it was friends having fun, taking stuff, and then they didn't want to get in trouble.
Yeah. So they all stuck to the same story. And yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, overall, it's just like a really good lesson on just safety in general, you know?
Yeah.
Lauren's parents said that early on in this investigation, when she was obviously missing, they would go out in the early hours of the morning and drive the route that they thought that she had taken, just to kind of get a sense of what it was like the night that she had vanished. One morning they saw a girl walking the same route that Lauren apparently had been, and she looked drunk. She didn't have shoes on either, ironically. And okay. just as Lauren would have been. And this was all over the news already then. Like, I think that just shows like people really think this won't happen to them, you know, mm-hmm. and it very well could have been. So I think there's steps that everybody can take to be safe and not give even someone evil the opportunity to take advantage of you. And there's actually this organization that's called Rachel's First Week. It was founded by Dr. Angie Fige, and her daughter died the very first week she had gone to college. And it was the same college that Lauren actually had attended. So she had fallen downstairs at a party and hit her head. The people that she was with didn't think anything was wrong. And they just, you know, laid her down until the next morning when they realized that something was very wrong with her. So they called 911, took her in, and she ended up eventually passing away in the ICU there. So her mom had founded this group, and she uses this organization to reach those entering college to help develop decision-making skills of teens when they're entering college. And it says to help with the monumental change. The foundation is dedicated to help protect the lives of teens as they transition into adulthood and help look out for yourself and others, which I think is cool because I had never heard of that. And I think it's something that they made it sound like it's, they teach it, you know, to high school, like seniors and stuff, like things to do just to look out. So, you know, you hear these stories all the time and you do think that stuff like this will never happen to you. And when you're young, you kind of think like you're inevitable, you know, invincible. I mean, not inevitable,
right.
but it's inevitable that you'll go missing and you're invincible. Yeah. So now Lauren's family only really has her memories to help keep her alive. So of course, you know, there's tons of ways that you can reach out. I'll give you the main information here. You can email helpfindlauren@gmail.com, or you can call 812-339-4477. And there are several other sites as far as like, you can make anonymous tips. You can talk to the private investigator, the police, the campus police. But we'll put all that in the show notes. I didn't want to list that all here, but I would at least wanted to give the main information as far as who, if you would happen to know anything. But that's the case of Lauren Spear, who is still missing. And that's that. Very sad, very scary.
Yeah.
And do you remember that case at all?
I don't.
No.
No,
but I vaguely remember it. I just remember seeing that picture of her because when I looked this case up, I was like, I remember that. But I don't think I knew all the details on it.
Yeah. See, that time frame was busy. I was in my first massage job, and my husband and I were looking at houses and things at that time. So, like, I was
pregnant at that time. So I remembered seeing that and just thinking, like, oh, I don't want to have a kid in this scary world. But here we are. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's that for the week. So heavy, but not as gruesome and detailed as it probably is. There's probably more that we just don't know. So it'll be interesting to see if anything ever comes of that.
For her parents' sake, I hope they eventually get some answers.
So awful. So,
Okay. So my random fact is that there was a chicken who lived with its head being cut off for 18 months.
What?
In Colorado. Oh,
wild.
Was dubbed Mike the Headless Chicken. He lived from, he hatched April 20th of 1945 and died March 17th of 1947. So the story is, when he was about 5 months old, this farmer went out to go get a chicken for dinner. And when he went to go cut off his head, he missed the jugular vein in one ear. So like most of the brainstem was still intact.
Oh, okay.
So that's how he was able to live. So like he, I guess, decided instead of, you know, putting it out of its misery to keep it.
I know. I was just going to say, who does that though? Like,
yeah.
What is it? I mean, I don't know. So that's weird.
Actually, like, Mike the chicken would still try to preen. He could still balance on a perch. He walked clumsily. He would try to peck her food. Yeah, and according to the Wikipedia, it says he tried to crow still, but it mostly sounded like a gurgling sound in his throat, which I'm like, that sounds horrifying.
Wait, how did he eat?
Okay, I'm getting to that, actually, because when I first looked it up, I was like, how did he stay alive for 18 months without eating?
Yeah.
So the guy who was the result of this for him decided to care for him, so he fed him a mixture of milk and water via an eyedropper and gave it small grains of corn and worms. So I think he just stuffed it down his throat, I guess.
Sick. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. That's dedication to an animal. I love an animal, but, like, what kind of quality of life is that for this chicken? Just put him out of his misery,
yeah,
dude.
Like, at that point,
you were going to kill him anyway.
Yeah. You should have just finished the job.
Right. And, like, so, no.
Yeah. It was bizarre. So this was in Fruta, Colorado, and it sounds like, I don't know if this is still a thing, but it sounds like in May they hold an annual Mike the Headless Chicken Day.
Okay, that's hilarious and strange all at the same time.
Right.
And funny, but also, like,
yeah. So in Wikipedia it talks about, they have, like, an egg toss and pin the head on the chicken.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Yep. Interesting. I don't know what the normal lifespan of a chicken is anyway, but 18 months seems like a hella long time to go without a head, so.
Right.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, it was a weird fact. And I was like, because that was my thought. I was like, how do you live for 18 months if you can't eat?
Yeah.
So I had to look up more, and that's where I found. He has his own Wikipedia page. You can go and look at it.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Thanks for enlightening us on that note. We can eat some chicken right about now. On that note, I can eat some chicken.
You have it.
Okay. Well, I know this was kind of a long case this week, and as I started it, I did not even have the intention to have a long one. And then I kept finding more information that I was like, well, I should probably, like, share all of that. So
yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Well, on that note, I mean, I guess I don't have anything else. So
you guys know the drill, like, rate, review, share, follow, all the things. All of our socials are in the show notes. And until next time, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.